Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on the Friday, the 19th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with artist Turbinet about his presentation on Monday at the Douglas Library. Also find out what's happening in town during arts up with our guest Nancy DeJourney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. At Writer's Almanac, music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, rain, possibly heavy at times with low temperatures around 53 degrees, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Forecast for Saturday, rain, possibly heavy at times with high temperatures around 57 degrees and southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Looks like the forecast for Saturday night is rain with low temperatures around 52 degrees. Sunday, continued rain with high temperatures around 58 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two men plead guilty to federal hate crime charges related to the assault of a Navajo man. Paul Beebe and Jesse Sanford pleaded guilty Thursday in U.S. District Court in Albuquerque, New Mexico. A third defendant, William Hatch, pleaded guilty in June. Last year, the victim, Vincent Key, was taken to an apartment in Farmington, New Mexico, where he was marked with symbols on his body like KKK and white power, along with a swastika symbol shaved onto his head. He also had a swastika symbol branded in his skin with a heated metal wire, while a towel was held in his mouth. Farrah Gold is one of the federal prosecutors on the case who worked closely with Key, now 23. He has a developmental age of 5 to 10 years old and lives on the Navajo reservation with his mother and siblings. The victim and his family were in court to watch the proceedings. Gold says Key was in good spirits.
He's very lovable. I mean, he hugged us and thanked us and drew pictures. He was sitting with a coloring book and crayons. That gives you an idea of his developmental age. And he drew pictures for Roberto and myself. And he was wearing a necklace that's called a fetish. And his mother made for him, and he actually gave it to me.
Roberto Ortega is an assistant U.S. attorney and also on the trial team.
We certainly hope that it'll send a message to everybody that this kind of behavior and activity will not be tolerated, and that we will deal with it. Both state and federal authorities will deal with these kind of crimes to the full extent of the law.
The men were the first to be charged under a federal hate crimes prevention law. The U.S. Justice Department says the law makes it easier to prosecute hate crimes motivated by race, ethnicity, gender, religion, national origin, or sexual orientation. At sentencing, Beebe faces 8.5 years in prison. The other two defendants face 5 years. The men also face penalties for state charges. Several incoming freshmen at South Dakota State University have already had a taste of college life through a program between the campus and Flandreau Indian School. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The Success Academy pairs the two schools to show students at Flandreau Indian School what they're able to do after high school and gives them a chance to see for themselves they can thrive in the college environment. Mary Jo Benton Lee administers the program at South Dakota State. She says one key to ensure success is to get students on campus early.
The critical time when adolescents are making decisions about their future is in those middle school years, that early adolescent time of life. That's when you really decide fundamentally what you can and what you can't do. So a key for us is we start when they're freshmen in high school. And what they do in the freshman year is they come up to SDSU for 6 full days of programming, and that throughout the academic year. And that programming is with our faculty and our students in our labs and in our classrooms.
Lee says by the time FIS students are high school seniors, they're taking one college-level class each semester. She says while she's technically the only employee of the Success Academy, about 300 faculty and retired professors make it a campus-wide effort. 10 of the students who finished the academy last spring have been accepted to the university. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
During this month in 1905, Alaska Native leader Chief Joseph Friday was born. From the community of Chivac, he was said to be an important cultural leader who spoke about traditional values and often led traditional dancing. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with additional funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Herb Benet is a well-known name in Southeast Alaska. He's an artist and he's going to be giving a presentation this Monday at the Douglas Library at 5 o'clock. And I'm honored to have him on the phone with me today to do a little pre-interview. Herb, thank you for being on the air with me today. Herb? Hello, Herb? I seem to have lost our connection with Herb Benet. We'll try to see if we can give him a call here in the next few minutes.
It's the birthday of the novelist Jonathan Coe, born in Lickey, a suburb of Birmingham, 1961, author of The Accidental Woman. It was on this date, 1829, the French painter and physicist Louis Daguerre presented his photographic process to the French Academy of Sciences. The first actual photograph had been made a couple of years earlier by Joseph Nicéphore Niépce, but the quality wasn't very good. The plate had to be exposed for 8 hours to capture an image. And Daguerre found a better way. He found that if he coated a copper plate with silver iodide, exposed it to light for 20 to 30 minutes, fumed it with mercury vapor, fixed it with a salt solution, he could get a permanent image. He called it a daguerreotype, of course, after himself. Many early photographers died from mercury poisoning using this method, but it was the method that was used. People lined up to have their portraits taken, though they knew you had to sit in blazing sunlight for up to half an hour, trying not to blink, your head clamped in place to keep it still, which is why they had such grim facial expressions. But it was a marvelous, mystifying, even scarifying thing at the time to look at an image of your actual self. It's the birthday of Ogden Nash, born Rye, New York, 1902, wrote 20 volumes of humorous verse, and two musicals, One Touch of Venus and Two's Company. Ogden Nash, who said, "Middle age is when you're sitting at home on a Saturday night and the telephone rings and you hope it isn't for you." It's the birthday of Philo Farnsworth, the inventor of the television, born in a log cabin, Beaver, Utah, 1906. He was 21 years old in 1927, when he transmitted his first image by television. It was a straight line. And it's the birthday of Gene Roddenberry, El Paso, Texas, 1921, the father of Star Trek. He flew B-17 bombers during World War II, was an officer in the LAPD, started writing for television, and in 1964, he developed the idea of a new series about space exploration. Desilu Productions took it up. It came out in 1966. Ratings were never great, only went on for 3 seasons, but it was a huge success in syndication and spawned 11 feature films. Here's a poem for today by Robert Morgan entitled Dew. It's something of a mystery, this minute rain downloading from the sky so slowly and invisibly, you don't know when it came, except at dusk, the grass is suddenly wet, a visitation from the air. precipitant from spirit world, of whitest incarnation or reverse transfiguration, herald of river, swamp, and ocean breath, sent heavenward, released to earth again to water weed and stone and shatter rainbows in the sun, the purest liquid that exists, too fine to slake our human thirst. Do, by Robert Morgan, from his book Terroir, published by Penguin Poets and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:11, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau, on a Juneau afternoon. First guest on the program comes to us by telephone, Herb Benet. Thank you very much for being on the air with us today, Herb.
Yes, sir.
How you doing today?
Well, I'll tell you, it's windy on Fritzco Road.
How windy is it?
Well, the trees are whipping around here, and I'm about a quarter of a mile in. But other than that, it's nice and warm and comfy where I am at in my loft.
That's good. First of all, my question is, you call yourself the old curmudgeon. Why do you call yourself that?
How's that again?
Why do you call yourself the old curmudgeon?
Oh, I just do that to my friends and relatives, you know.
Why is that?
Well, don't you know what curmudgeon means?
Well, you could define it for me, please.
Well, I don't have the dictionary here, but, you know, it's a feisty old dude.
You grew up in Douglas and Thane. Could you describe some of your early childhood memories, please?
Oh, I have so many of them. So many of them. It was great growing up in Thane. Thane had the biggest sand pile for the kids to play in. And Thane, the beach, as it is now, is quite a bit different than it was. But it was a golf course for the mucky-mucks of the AJ mine industry people. And we of course, had company housing on both sides of the road and also down below on the beach. And it was a great, great playground for us kids.
What were some of the things you did as a kid?
Well, we'd go out and salvage tees and golf balls and on the place, and we also had a little creek that was between the mainland and the beach, and we used to build dams, you know, and we used to have a lot of fun building little dams, and we'd try and get the dam as high as we could, but it would leak and let go, and there'd be quite a flow of water. Also, the beach was a spot for trollers. They'd put their boat on the beach and work on the bottom. Also, U.S. Navy planes, double-wing Grumman planes would put up on the beach, and it was something for the kids to look at these Navy planes sitting on the beach at Thane. And my dad has a photograph of a World War era, a four-stack American cruiser coming up the channel. And it was great. We went to school on a bus, and we sometimes had to drive on the beach because of the big snow slides that would block the road. It was pretty interesting, the big snow slide, the snow slide gulch there, the main one. It took out a steel tower there, and living at Thane was pretty fascinating.
What kind of town was Juneau like to grow up in?
Well, Juneau was a mining town, and My dad was the chief electrical engineer of the AJ, so he had a pretty good job. And there was a strike involved, and it was a mining town, a rough and tumble mining town, but, you know, it was pretty orderly. There were plenty of bars, and, there was the line, you know, the ladies of the line, the Juno was a fascinating place. We had two theaters, the Coliseum and the Capitol. We had, plenty of bars, and, we enjoyed the town, and, it was great living, and I couldn't have had a better place to grow up in. I was very fortunate, my family and I had a good mother and father too. My mother was too good to the kids, but my dad was a disciplinarian, and when he said to jump, we'd say, "How high, Dad?"
You've been a carpenter, a trail crewman, a cat skinner, and an illustrator. What exactly was a cat skinner, and how did that relate to gold mining?
Well, Hayes and Whiteley did gold mining throughout the whole Juneau area, and we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sluice boxes in the area, and I was running a cat. I was running a D7, pushing sand into the sluice box header. And we had an operation at Thane, we had an operation in Douglas, we had an operation where the big tugboat landing area is, that secure area there where the big ships land. And anyhow, that was a big sand pile, and we were gold mining, and I was running a sluice box, and I would run a TD-14. That was an Alice Chalmers and International. I run various cats, you know, and the trucks would haul and dump dirt, and it was an interesting job, and I saw a lot of gold.
So you didn't actually skin cats?
Well, cat skinner is a term for cat operator.
Tell me what it was like being a trail crewman.
Well, that was great because we had an operations building at the subport, and we would go out on the Ranger 10 and the boats, and we'd go out to outlying areas in southeast Alaska and work trails, and we'd spend time up Taku River. We spent time out on Hasselberg, and it was fun to work at Hasselberg. We had our boats and everything, but we were a trail crewers, and we would repair beat up boats and work on the cabin up there. And the Forest Service then was a great outfit to work for. My trail boss was a great guy. Jocko Mills was one of them from Douglas, and I'm a little weak on names, but we had great crew people. There was a bunch of Juneau guys and Douglas guys, and we would fly by Alaska Coastal to these outlying areas and work on trails. It was a good life. Also, I worked in the Forest Service in the state of Washington at the Tiano-Antietam country in Ellensburg area.
What did you do there?
Well, there we were pack horsed, and we'd go in and work on trails, and a friend of mine had horses, and we'd go up for 10 days and get 4 days off. And so I learned to ride horses bareback, and it was a beautiful horse that my buddy presented to the Forest Service. And we would go up and spend 10 days and then get 4 days off. And it was a great summer. I also had a 74 Harley OHV Hydroglide, and that was great to have. I bought it with a sidecar, and a buddy and I went out on a town in Ellensburg. We almost killed ourselves on that bike and sidecar, so I took the sidecar off, and I was happy with the bike.
What kind of changes have you seen happen in Juneau and Douglas and Thane?
Oh, they're so innumerable, I can't even begin to tell. But Douglas, I remember growing up in Douglas, we moved from Thane because our house was falling apart. My dad was cursing the company, so we bought a place in Douglas, a third house on the right as you enter Douglas, which is a Sabico house now. But we had a good school, and we had some interesting teachers. And in those days, the term guns in school was not a scary item, because we would take our guns to school, our 22 rifles, and we'd get off early at 2 in the afternoon and go up grouse and ptarmigan hunting. And there was no paranoia about guns in school, but it was a totally different time, and there were some interesting things that happened. I remember we'd have a half hour or an hour off at noon to go home and eat, and one sunny day, it was a spring day, and the mountains were just glistening with this heavy snow. You know how the sun hits the snow and it just almost glows, you know. And we were listening for snow slides, and they'd make one hell of a roar. And we heard this roar, and I said, "My God, this is unusual." And it certainly was unusual, because up Gasnaw Channel was a B-25 flying lead on a squadron of P-39 Air Cobras painted olive drab. This is during wartime. And they all had the Russian markings on them. These were the Lend-Lease aircraft heading to Russia. And there was a CAVU situation, ceiling invisibility unlimited from Seattle all the way into Alaska. So they came up the inside passage, and that was a sight. And I don't know if anybody ever got photographs of that, but they had to land in Juneau and refuel and everything. But that was quite a sight for the kid.
I'm talking to artist Herb Benet, who will be making a presentation this Monday at the Douglas Library about his art and his life. Herb, what drew you to art in particular? When did you find yourself starting to draw?
Oh, I don't know. I started with a pencil when I was 2 or 3 years old. And, you know, I've been to a few art schools, but most of it is experience. And my fascination with aircraft and ships and this country we live in, this southeastern Alaska, I mean, it's in my blood. And when I go, I want to, I have an arrangement so that my ashes will be dropped at Cape Fanshawe, which is a very interesting place. It's kind of symbolic with me. I've run about 10, 11 boats up from Seattle to Juneau, from 18-foot outboards to 42-foot yachts. And when I go, to, when on my way to Juneau, to my home country, Cape Fanshawe is symbolic, because right there you make a 90-degree turn and you're on the home stretch to home.
What about planes, boats, and ships that appeal to you? Why do they continue to hold your fascination?
What's that now?
Why do boats, planes, and ships hold your fascination?
Well, I grew up here, and Alaska Coastal was a part of my life, and the aircraft were part of Juneau, a very important part of Juneau. The Grumman Gooses and the PBYs and the aircraft of Alaska Coastal Airlines, that was the biggest small plane amphibian airline in the world at one time. And, of course, the ships that came up Gasnaw Channel, it was pretty amazing. During World War II, there were submarines, there were cruisers, there were destroyers, there were torpedo boats. I have a photograph of torpedo boats running on the other side of Douglas Island in my stuff. But the ships and the boats were just something I grew up with, and I couldn't help but sketching them and drawing them and painting them. And I finally decided, well, you know, I can't stand a tie and an alarm clock, so I guess I'll be an artist.
But how many paintings and drawings do you think you've done in your lifetime so far?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't tell you. I have photographs of a lot of them, but that's something that, you know, I didn't catalog.
Do you have a favorite subject?
Pardon?
Do you have a favorite subject?
Well, it's probably boats in Southeastern or aircraft in Southeastern, but one of my favorite subjects, is, which I made a print of, is Night Lights of Juneau with a fishing boat going by and a blue canoe, marine highway vessel, and the lights of Juneau at night. It's one of my favorite prints, one of my favorite pieces. But I've done paintings of war, and I've done space paintings. I like to do space paintings, and I like to keep versatile, you know. And I like big. I like big. My biggest painting is 43 feet by 13 feet, which was done for A67 in Fairbanks. And, of course, I'm kind of proud of my 4 by 10-foot painting called Tugboat Passage, which is down in the borough meeting office on the main floor down there.
I'm talking to Herb Benet, artist who's making a presentation this Monday at 5 p.m. in the Douglas Library. Herb, what is your process for doing art? Do you take a picture first, or do you sit there and just draw and paint on the scene itself?
Well, there's several ways to attack it, depending on what's going to come down. For instance, if somebody wants a painting of their fishing boat, I'll say, well, do you have photographs? And if you don't have the good enough photographs, I'll take the photographs. And that's for detail, you know. But I can put in the background of the Southeastern almost free-handed, you know. But the technical aspect is a time consumer. And you know, when you're doing aircraft, why, one of my pride and joys is a print called Shaky Jake and the Goose, and that's the Grumman Goose and Shaky Jake was a Belanca, single-engine Belanca. And you spent a lot of time making sure you had the detail of the aircraft right. I'm familiar with one of the world's famous aircraft illustrators, and his name is Dietz, and he lives in Seattle. And I was fortunate to get to know Mr. Dietz. He's an international illustrator. He does beautiful World War One illustrations. I have several of his prints. He's a great guy, and it's nice to know some of these people. And I'm aware of aircraft illustrators from all over the world, and the great marine painters too. I have some of the books by these people. There's an awful lot of good artists out there.
When people look at your paintings, what kind of an emotion do you want to stir in their soul? Do you just want them to say, "Well, that's a nice picture of a boat or a ship," or do you want to teach them something more?
Oh well, some people complimenting me, they say, "Well, that's a Herb Bonnet sky," you know, and that's a little bit too much of a compliment, but it's nice to get a compliment. I got a call from California day before yesterday. And a guy had got a hold of my website? Yeah, my website, which was set up by Patty Coots Stoll. Patty Coots was Captain Coots' daughter, and she set up a website. And this guy from California called, and he complimented me. And we had quite a talk, and an Alaska Airlines pilot called me the other day and wanted some Grumman Goose prints. So, you know, I get some compliments, and I'm not afraid of criticism either. But I wouldn't want to have done anything else, you know. I was a production illustrator on the B-52 program at Boeing for a while. That was pretty interesting. I had to punch a time clock.
That's probably because you had such an attention to detail.
The production illustrators, they do isometrics, detailed drawings of the systems and the interior and the engines and all kinds of stuff. And And I could go on and on about what we did, and of course we were cleared for secret, and it was interesting working at Boeing as an illustrator.
Do you have a favorite medium? Is it pencil, charcoal, oil?
Well, I like a certain pencil, a Kohinoor Offset number 656 pencil, which I use, and I like that. But my primary or my basic is acrylics. It's a fast. Dries fast. You can use it as an impasto build-up, or you can use it as a watercolor, and it's a pretty versatile medium.
What kind of advice do you have for people who want to follow in your footsteps or your brushstrokes?
Oh, I don't like to give advice, but, you know, you got to have the passion and the interest, you know. If you, if you like animals, you know, there's always room for a very good animal artist, you know. And it's good to know figure drawing, and it's good to know everything, because there's no end to illustration. Of course, now it's all there's an awful lot of illustrators have been replaced by the computer and digital age, and there's a lot of people who have a lot of knowledge about computers and the digital aspects of the medium, but a lot of them don't know much about composition and layout, but then there are those that do. Of course, you see advertising on television that most of them are ridiculous, I think, but it's all in the change, the big change. Society has changed so much, you know, since when I was a kid, I was very fortunate to have made two trips on an ocean-going tug from Juneau to San Francisco, and we made those trips twice, and there was a bunch of Douglas and Juneau guys on the big tug. It's 116-foot, or 111 or 112, I forget. They're called Mickey tugs, and they were beautiful tugs. I have an illustration of that tug at the Douglas Library, but I love that tugboat. They were built in the Pacific Northwest. Mickey tugs were single engine, and Mickeys were twin engine. And we had the Douglas crew. My brother was on it. Will Rice was on it. Ralph Kibbe was in the engine room. Red Lockhart, who became the big shot in the Marine Highway System, he was our captain. We had a crew of about 12, and that was a fascinating summer.
So you mentioned Douglas, the Douglas Library. You'll be making a presentation at 5 o'clock next Monday. What are you going to be talking about?
I have no idea. Probably what we just discussed.
Hopefully you'll have a few more stories. Do you have any harrowing or life-threatening situations that you might want to remember?
Any what?
Life-threatening situations.
Oh, let's see, life-threatening situations. Well, I don't know if they're life-threatening or not, but I was on my way back to the Army Arctic Training Center in Big Delta by taking off in a Stratocruiser from the Juneau Airport, and an engine blew. And so we went around and landed again. And we were off the coast of Oregon in a big storm in the Mickey tug on our way to San Francisco, where we would dock at Sausalito, and we were off in a big storm that one night, and the basic crew was up forward in the bunks, or about six or eight of us up in the forward section, and all of a sudden there was like a shotgun went off in my ear, and what had happened, we hit a piece of drift, a log, and it took one of the big guards, one of the big bulwark guards off. And, you know, that could have been a disaster.
I've been talking to Herb Benet, has a lifetime
excuse me.
That's okay. He has a lifetime of experiences in Alaska and beyond. Herb, thank you very much for talking with us today, and your presentation at 5 p.m. at the Douglas Library should be a good one.
Yeah, it's at 6:30. I got a call, and do you mind if we use you and have a presentation? I blindingly said yes, but Well, the people that are setting it up, they're doing a good job. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you, Herb, for talking to me. It's been an honor talking.
Yeah.
Steamboat boys are coming, old Skagway's on a spree tonight. The Yukon's froze up and there's snow on the ground. We're all heading outside on the next high tide. Every berth is booked and there's no room to be had. There's piles of trunks on the wharf. The dock boss is screaming out orders to his hands, to a shrieking of protesting pulleys and booms. Look alive, haul away. The Princess Sophia is getting up steam. We've got to cast off before light of day. Dawson's a fine place in August. Fireweed blooming crazy through the night and the day. Beneath the scar on the dome, I've raised family and home. But when the stern wheelers get winched up the frost-laced waves, we draw up our checks. Wait for the flowers again in the spring. Look alive, haul away. The Princess Sophia is getting up steam. We've got to cast off before light of day. Up the gangway they jostle, and there's scores more waiting in vain. 386 have her pulled to the rails. The Sophia's the last steamer south for a month. In God's name, cried out a voice in my ear, I've got to get south on this boat. My mother in Pittsburgh is dying. You can read the wire if you like. It's here in my pockets, I'll pay you well. I've just simply got to get out. So sell me your ticket and let me go home. She needs me. Anna took a long look at the hurrying throng as they made their way up the plank. Felt the snowflakes brushing across my nose, swirling blizzard ship in the night. And a feeling went through me, a shudder quite queer, and I've never been able to tell if I gave my ticket to him in pity or to postpone my own journey to hell. Steam whistle wailed, lost in the snow, muffled by mountain walls down the canal. Cast loose the line, engines thudding alive, the Sophia backs off from the wharves of time. And I watched as the snow dropped a curtain of white between the lights along her hull. And the black of the night. On down the canal, wrapped in the dark of the storm, the Sophia strayed her course in the wee hours of dawn. And the shock of the crash knocked the passengers from sleep as the Princess Sophia struck Vanderbilt Reef. But she didn't take water, she was held fast. The people were calmed by the captain's request. Don't lower the boat, the hull is still tight. We'll float with the high tide and get off all right. With daylight, a wire brought assistance from shore. A score of small craft that had heard her distress. But the seas were still high, the storm still in force. Too rough to lower boats was the captain's firm choice. Besides, the Alice is steaming this way. We could save the cost of salvage if we'd wait one more day. There's even the chance the tide will float us free. It's too early to tell, let's just wait and see. So they sat and they waited all through the day. the people relaxed and the ship's band played. It was a festival mood, there was laughter and song, while the small boats bobbed close the whole day long. Till late afternoon, when the north wind rose and they beat for refuge on the darkening shore. No one knows what happened that night as the blizzard screamed round her lonely lights, and the passengers lay huddled in their cabins and beds, watching the waves swing the lamps that hung overhead. But the force of the storm brought an unseasonal tide that lifted Sophia's stern right up to the sky. And as the captain watched helplessly, she was ground across the teeth of the jagged rock shoals of Vanderbilt Reef. The sound of her plates being torn from beneath, water rushing into a hissing of steam, terrified screams from steerage below, as the sea pushed her free from her perch on the shoal. Too rough to launch boats, no time for alarm, no help nearby in the teeth of the storm. The Sophia has turned from a ship to a stone. My God, we are sinking, screams the wireless phone. Icy cold water, black of the night, fumbling for life vests in the failing light. Where are the children? Which way to the deck? All lost in the vortex of the foaming wreck. When the Alice arrived in the light of day, not one passenger remained to be taken away. The tips of her masts breaking sea at low tide marked the grave of the Princess Sophia. Elizabeth Kitch, Manchester Rhine, and Alexander, owner of the engineer mine, and the boy bound for Pittsburgh whose name I don't know, and the steamboat families all bound for below. And the gold in the safe, and the freight, and the mail. Not a single soul left to tell the tale. Just a bedraggled setter, all covered with oil, washed up on the shores of the Lynn Canal. Well, they cut down the tops of her masts one day, so as not to frighten travelers who passed where she lay. And it's years been now, and the memories are few, are the people that remember all the people who knew. And the summer tourists come by the thousands to see if the inside passage is all that it claims to be. And I wonder if any of them pause to hear the crashing of the waves on the rocks so near. And I wonder as I watch the lowering sky if we're going to have a storm when you cast off tonight.
Music of Steve Heitz. Time is 3:43. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau.
Tonight on 360 North, get news from around the world at 7 p.m. on the BBC World News, followed at 7:30 by Alaska Weather. At 8, the Evening at Egan lecture brings us left-handed polar bears with Dr. Richard Nelson. At 9:30, learn about invasive species in Alaska's waters on a World Ocean Day special, followed by the Alaska Report from Washington, D.C. at 10. Watch these programs and more tonight on 360 North.
Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juneau Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juneau Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
And in the studio with me is Nancy DeTourney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, who thought she was going to take a day off today but didn't make it.
There it is. It's all right. We got lots to do.
Lots of stuff going on in town?
Well, there's a few things, you know. It's damp out there, and so appropriately it's Camp Damp Weekend. That starts this evening. This is the contradance thing that happens out at Eagle River United Methodist Camp.
You can sign up for the whole weekend or sign up day by day if you need to.
Mm-hmm. And it's usually loads of fun, and I think you get to dance in your extra tufts, which is probably a good plan for today. Let's see. Oh, if you want more information about that, 463-3214. Let's see. We have this afternoon the Pirate Pops played up at the State Office Building, and it's wonderful. They are performing tonight again at 7 o'clock, and it's at the Zach Gordon Youth Center covered area, the covered play area. So the rain does not stop them. They're pirates. Arr! They'll be able to do it.
But you should dress for the weather anyway.
Not the vehicle, as my father would have said. We have live jazz, Tom Loker and Wayne Norlin, up at the Timberline Grill at 5:30. At 6:30, it's the Wooshkinati Poetry Slam at the Canvas. The suggested donation for this is $5. If you want more information about that, 586-1750. Get there early. These events have been packed these days.
Now, I heard Ricky D talking about that earlier today, and I thought it was a poultry slam. It's
poetry. A poultry slam, sort of like a turkey toss?
Kind of like that.
Well, okay then. Well, we'll do
but
that.
But it's poetry.
It's poetry.
Okay, no, yes. I'm straightened down now.
All right, very good. So, 7 o'clock, Pirate Pops over at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Pay as you can, 723-3564. And let's see, we got Dan Hobson also up at the Gold Room playing classical guitar this evening at 7. He also does that on Saturday. It's Maude Carousel presenting Whirligig at the Rendezvous. A couple of shows, 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock. The tickets are available at the Rendezvous and at Hearthside Books. 586-1270. This is a local boy, I want to say makes good or something.
He's been to London and back, and if they're going back to London, they've performed to us like great crowds.
Yeah, so it's very exciting to see Seneca doing these things. So go, you've got this whole weekend to check it out. Also at 9:30, it's Pastor Lunch Meat and the Pimentos with Olive Loaf at the Alaskan Bar. Always enjoy them. At 9 o'clock Saturday morning, it's the Nifty 50K Road Race. You meet out at the Eagle River Picnic Shelter. You can pre-register for that today at Pavitt Health and Fitness or any of the Alaska Club locations or at the Nugget Outfitter. You can also register Saturday morning at 8:30 out at the race start, which is at the Eagle River Shelter.
Well, you have about 10 more minutes to register early. So you have to, if you're not registered already, zip over there. Use the zip line to get there.
Yeah. Tots in Motion at 10 o'clock in the morning in the Canvas parking lot, rain or shine. It's also Arts and Crafts and Antiques Show Weekend at Nugget Mall. That's from 10 until 5, both Saturday and Sunday. Kids Day at the Glacier at 11. This is for little kids, but they need to come with a parent. Kids ages 4 to 6, and it's free. At 1 o'clock, it's a 39 Clues Party at the Valley Library. This is also free. It's in the Mendenhall Mall. You can get more information about it at 586-0451, kind of appropriate given that we're really close to coming to the 39 steps at the Perseverance. At 2 o'clock, it's a 90th birthday party for Remigneaux at her gallery on Jordan Creek. She says no gifts, but if you've enjoyed Ree's wonderful artwork all these years, it'd be a nice time to stop in and just say thank you to her. Goldtown Nickelodeon has in their kids lineup Sita Sings the Blues at 2 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, it's Names of Love. At 6 o'clock, it's Tom Loker and Wayne Norland over at the Prospector Hotel, and then you can see Names of Love again. At 8 o'clock, it is the Saturday night late night swing is what they call it. Now, 8's not that late.
For some people, it is.
Okay. All right. So that's at the Canvas. There's lessons, some kind of Southeast swing lessons to begin with, and then there's refreshments, and it's lots of fun, and you should go. 586-1750 for more information. Again, your opportunity to see Maude Carousel over at the Rendezvous. Also, there's Latin dancing at Latinos at 9 o'clock. On Sunday, it's the last day to turn in your summer reading games. You can do that at any public library. 10 o'clock in the morning, there's the parent-kid clay class at the Canvas. The Sunday market, this will be the last Sunday market of the season. I think it will be indoors, just judging from the weather forecast. But this runs from noon until 3. We usually have produce in from Haines and different places, and people make pies and goodies, and there's arts and crafts. It's just kind of fun, noon to 3. There's a kids' marimba class at the Canvas at 4:30 on Sunday. There's a raku workshop at the Canvas at 6 o'clock. and there's also the ballroom dancing that happens over at the Racquetball Club. On Monday, the teachers go back to school. At noon, the Toastmasters at the Federal Building. It is the deadline for, oh, that was last week. Never mind. At 5 o'clock, you were just talking with Herb Bonet. On Monday, he'll be over at the Douglas Library for conversations. This is a free event. And it is at 6 o'clock, the Capoeira workshop again over at the Canvas. They do this every Monday through August 29th, so we're coming to the end of that. School begins on Tuesday for grades 1 through 12. It's so exciting. I love getting new pencils and new crayons and all that sort of stuff. And at 8:30 on Tuesday morning, it is the back-to-school potluck brunch for the retired teachers. They go over to the Park Shore and celebrate the fact, I guess, that they are not back in school.
You laugh at all the teachers.
But they raise funds and make contributions for school supplies. So if you want more information about that, it's 523-9722. We have haiku on the street at noon on Tuesday. You can still do the historic downtown walking tours at the City Museum. Give them a call, 586-3572. They offer these tours Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from now until through September. There's a 6 o'clock kids hand-building ceramics class at the Canvas on Tuesdays. Toastmasters Club in the Valley meets at 6:15 on Tuesdays at the St. Paul's Catholic Church Parish Hall. 463-5885 for more information about either one of the Toastmasters Club. Swing dance lessons at 6:30 at the Canvas on Tuesday. Wednesday, there is the Write for Your Life journaling and memoir club that meets at the Mendenhall Valley Library. The Canvas is offering Zumba at 6 o'clock on Wednesdays. There is a beginning figure class drawing at the Canvas at 6 o'clock, and the Nickelodeon starts showing Daylight. It's probably a good time to start showing Daylight. On Thursday, we have pretty much the same stuff. Dead Man Walking, 7 o'clock, Thursday evening.
That is the dance for the Trail Mix folks.
Yes, it's a fundraiser for Trail Mix. It's put on by Land Locally, and that's over at the Jack. You can get your tickets. They're $20 at the Jack. You can get them online at the Arts Council or at the door. They are not selling them at Hearthside Books, so do give us a call if you'd like to get tickets for them. These are the folks that some of them were in Trampled by Turtles last year. So it's real fun, and it's nice to raise funds for the trails that you all enjoy using. We should just mention briefly that the calendar, the Arts Council, and the K2 calendar are now joined at the hip. It's the same calendar, so if you have information that you want on the calendar, you can send an email to junoartscouncil@gmail.com, and you have a K2 one as well, right? 2K2? There's a Gmail account for K2. It's probably on your website. I don't remember what it is.
You didn't tell me there would be a test here today.
Yeah, there's a test. You're supposed to know these things. You need to put, it's really helpful if you just, in the subject line, put the name of your event, and then in the body, don't say anything like, would you please put this on the calendar? Just put the name of the event and the subject, and then put who, what, when, why, and because sometimes when you open your email, Google or Gmail will let you just, boop, push a little button, it goes right into the calendar. It makes it lots easier for all of us. But be sure to include all of that information, who it is that's putting it on, where it is, what time it is, all that sort of stuff. And that way it gets read as a PSA on K2, and it gets onto the public calendar that everybody can access either at the Arts Council website or the K2 website.
Nancy Duchenne, thank you for making things everything so simple.
Oh, so simple. Thank you for having me.
See you next week. Coming up tonight on Left, Right, and Center, Investor in Anxiety, Syrian Instability, and also Perry Scrutinized. It's happening tonight at 7 o'clock at Left, Right, and Center on KTWO News in Juneau. Had a report of a found pair of glasses, men's prescription glasses, found about 7.5-mile Glacier Highway. If those glasses are yours, so you know who they might belong to. 465-8861 is the telephone number that you can call them at. Saturday hike for August 20th is the Eagle Glacier Trail. They will have a hike the trail for a while, then return and have lunch at the new cabins at Eagle Beach. Weather will determine the final length and destination. You should wear waterproof hiking or rubber boots, warm layers of clothing, and bring plenty of food and water. Meet at the trailhead at 28.5-mile Glacier Highway on the right side of the road immediately after the Eagle River Bridge at 9:30 in the morning. No dogs or firearms, please, and have a great hike.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
I am a leader.
Volunteer.
I give back to my community.
Alter, I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
Here's my story. Here are our stories.
50 teams from as many communities brought nearly 500 student-athletes from the far reaches of the state to Anchorage to compete in the annual Native Youth Olympics Games Alaska. Boys and girls both did their personal bests for 3 days in events like the kneel jump, wrist carry, high kick, and one-hand reach. Competitors vied for top slots in the two-foot high kick, seal hop, and one-foot high kick. There were two stick pull events decided as well, Indian and Eskimo.
I'm Jared Thurston. I am 17, and I'm from Aniak, originally from Kalispell, Alaska.
Jared says this is his first and last year competing in NYO. He's a high school senior. He says before recently moving to Aniak, his school in Kalispell didn't have a team for him to join.
I think it's really fun. I didn't think I'd place anywhere because it's competition from throughout Alaska, and I didn't know I'd come out on top. It's not about winning. It's about NYO is about beating your best score, like just going past what you can do. It's mainly what it's about. So it's takes strength, endurance, and stamina to do all this.
The Native Youth Olympic Games Alaska also included music performances and other entertainment. There was even a pilot bread recipe contest. Anyone can participate in NYO, whether you're Native or not. This year's final results are available on the Cook Inlet Tribal Council's website. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
I am a teenager.
I am an Alaskan. I give back.
Do you see me? Recognize youth ages 12 to 19 at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards, Initiative for Community Engagement.
Garson doing his version of Space Oddity by David Bowie. Time is just about 4 o'clock. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT Sirsuna at 91.9. An excursion inlet in Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on Digital Channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up next Monday on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Tim Molson about programming next week on 360 North TV, a writer's almanac, bird note, music, and more. If you'd like to be a guest on a Juneau afternoon or know someone that should be, please give me a call. My name is Jeff Brown. My phone number is 463-6425. In the weather forecast for today, there's a flood advisory from 4 a.m. till 4 p.m. this Saturday. Forecast for tonight, rain heavy at times later on, low temperatures around 53 degrees, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Forecast for Saturday, more rain heavy at times with high temperatures around 57 degrees. Saturday night, rain, low temperatures around 52 degrees, and Sunday looks like more rain, and Monday looks like more rain, and Wednesday there's a chance of rain. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon, and have a great day and a great weekend.